Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, as we look back at the first half of a season that has certainly been lively, to say the least. We're all set up for a battle royal at the top of all three divisions, at the halfway point in the race for promotion, and down at the bottom, it will no doubt be equally tight and no less tense. We've seen hirings, firings, and one or two retirings, and it's not even New Year yet. For now, though, let's take a stock of where we are and bring you bang up to date with all that you may have missed over the last 4.5 months with the very best of the guests so far this season on the official EFL podcast. Back in August, we welcome to the pod my good friend and Sky Sports commentator colleague David Stahl to sit in the co-pilot seat for the very first time. And so well did he do that he's been a regular ever since. David was keen to point out that despite having a job that he loves, it's not always as glamorous a lifestyle as people might think. Now, broadcasting, working in TV is all very glamorous. It's all Winnebagos, it's all chauffeur-driven limousines, it's helicopter rides. Last night you were at Portsmouth, you live up in the northwest. Wasn't quite that, was it, my friend?
No, I think that's... Let's start off by saying this is the best job in the world. I absolutely
adore it. You have
to say
that.
There's no one sort of bullying me here into saying that. But I love the spontaneity of commentary, the fact that you can prepare all you like to prepare and the whistle goes, you have no idea what is going to happen. And it's magic when you get a good game or a great goal or a career-defining moment or something like that to sort of try and... not spoil, if you like. But yeah, there are certain aspects of the job that people perhaps don't realise or think are more glamorous than they are. And as you say, Portsmouth against Exeter City last night, I live in the northwest, so I travelled down to Portsmouth, did the game, and then travelled back home again, which means you get back home sort of, I think I got into the house around about 4:30 in the morning, and I've got two young kids, so I was up to do the nursery football camp run at 7 o'clock in the morning, and that's your day, and you sort of, you know, you roll with it. But, I love the job, I wouldn't change it, but it's, when you travel a long way, which we do with games, it's every now and again you just need a nap.
I'm feeling you, Stowley. Sometimes I just need a nap as well. But maybe that's because we're both men of a certain age. So it was a strong start for Stowell, who not only demonstrated his impressive knowledge of all things EFL, but also the importance of the correct pronunciation of players' names. As he explained to myself and Derby County's often mispronounced midfielder, Conor Hourihan. Let me bring Stowley in here just to get you both up to speed. And as you know, Stowley is one of our brightest and best, of course, at Sky Sports. And knowing our commentators like I do, they're all very thorough, Conor. You'll know that. They're all very well prepped before they head into a game. Stowley, I'll come to you first. Being able to chat with players like we are doing with Conor, it's imperative for your job, really, isn't it? Given your approach, that personable approach that you've got to how you do actually commentate on games.
Well, first of all, you're very kind, Prutz, but I think you're right as well. It is important to have a good relationship with players and managers. And one of the most important things for me as a commentator and as someone who speaks a few languages or has done in the past, at least learning languages along the way, is to get the pronunciation of players' names correct. And I know down through the years, I've heard various versions of Connor's surname. I wonder how many versions Connor has heard of his own surname. Is it something that bothers you when it's wrong, or do you not care about that? How do you feel?
You know what? I'm 32 and a half now, let's say, nearly 33. So at this stage, if it bothered me, it would be wrong of me to say it. So no, look, I've heard a few people saying it over the years. I think one or two have got it right. It seems to have come up in a lot of interviews over the last couple of years. I think they asked me when I was at Aston Villa in like a Talk Sport interview, and it kind of kicked off from there, and everyone seems to ask me since. So before I say it, why don't you give it a try?
Well, I'm lucky, I think, because I've worked with Keith Andrews, of course, but we all know Keith well. Right. And so we had a chat before a game a while back, and someone had said your name incorrectly. So he kept saying to me, make sure you say Hourihan, Hourihan. I've over the years I've heard Hourihane, all sorts of even Hourihane. So someone's made you sort of Spanish or Portuguese along the way. So you've had a fair few versions.
Yeah, when Wes Hoolihan was playing, I think I got a few Wes Hoolihans as well. obviously he's retired now, so that's kind of gone out the window a little bit, but that used to come up now and again as well.
That has tickled me with the Wes Houlihan one. Harahan. Conor Harahan. Or maybe I'll just call him Conor. Anyway, David Stowell hasn't been my only co-pilot, as Sky's Gary Weaver has also been a regular wingman for me this season. Gary can speak both English and Scouse fluently, which was enough to confuse me in the early days when I believed him to be two completely different people. Okay then, our first guest this week on the official EFL podcast. I say guest, he's a co-host. He's going to help me later on talk to the Ipswich Town manager, Kieran McKenna. The Tractor Boys absolutely flying in the Championship. And this man is permanently flying with his commentary across the Sky Sports Network and across the world, if you're lucky enough to be able to tune in overseas. It is Gary Weaver. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, my friend?
Prutum, okay. I'm just admiring your quiff as usual, which is outstanding today. Outstanding. I was going to say, mate, do you want me to do this in my normal Anfield Scouse accent or
well,
be broadcast
voice? This is part of kind of pulling the curtain back on what makes great commentators, the different gears that they can go through and the different voices they can put on. Because as we've discussed before, when I first met you both pre and post game, I was thinking that I was talking to somebody completely different. But that is your big boy broadcasting voice. So anywhere in between is absolutely fine with me.
Okay, let's do it. I was told at school I wouldn't do this job because of my
really?
Accent, but you know, 17-year-old people that come from poor areas where I'm from and talk like you won't make it. So some would say it's still not being a commentator yet, but you know, I think
that's the best place to start. That motivational point that you just made, that if you put your mind to it, don't listen to the doubters and crack on. That's a wonderful place to start. Anyway, let's get stuck into the football, shall we? Enough of this badinage pre-kickoff. And crack on we most certainly did, as that was the show that saw us welcome to the podcast a young coach that we've been keen to speak to for some time. Step forward, Mr. Kieran McKenna. It's an absolute treat to welcome this guest along. I had the pleasure of speaking to him last season at length down at the training ground in Suffolk. They've since gone on to do very, very good things in getting promoted into the Championship and settling back very well indeed. It's Ipswich Town boss Kieran McKenna, the league leaders, going very well indeed. Kieran, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on. A very straightforward take on Ipswich Town so far this season is, so far, so good, mate.
Yeah, if only it was as simple and straightforward as that sounds. We've of course happy with the start we've had to get three wins and to win in the cup. Of course, we certainly would have took that, but I think the reality is, we felt the size of the step up. The games have all been really challenging. We're learning a lot each day. We're learning a lot each game, and we're enjoying the step up. But it certainly is one, and. We're under no illusions about the challenges ahead, but you know, we're really enjoying it at the moment.
Kieran, I was commentating on Plymouth Argyle against Southampton at the weekend, spoke to Stephen Schumacher and said, you know, have you found anything that you've had to play any differently so far? Do you need to play any differently with the step up? How have you found it so far? Are you still trying to play the same way as you did to get out to League One, or have you had to change things slightly in the opening weeks?
No, look, we're still trying to keep the same intent as what we had. We want to be really brave on and off the ball. We want to build our way bravely with the ball and build through the pitch and turn that into really exciting attacking football, and we want to press high and try and win the ball back as fast as possible. But we've had moments of each game where we've certainly done that really well. I think the Stoke game at home, we've done that for the large majority of the game. But also the reality of the division and the step up for our players is that, you know, we're not going to be the dominant team for every moment of every game. And, that's something that we were well aware of. We worked pre-season on, you know, the different phases and how we'd have to defend, you know, compact at times, and when we have to defend deep, how we can still be aggressive, how we can still get pressure on the ball, and how we can, you know, have a big counter-attacking threat. So, our intent is as it was last season, to be the dominant team, and I think we will be more dominant stylistically, you know, as time goes on in this division. But certainly in the first three games, there's certainly been periods where we've had to show different elements to our games, not just from a tactical point of view, but also from a mental point of view, knowing that we're not always going to feel like the dominant team in games, and we have to control the game without the ball at times, and we can also, you know, do that very well and show that we can be a good counter-attacking team in moments. And I think it's a much more rounded challenge for us than last year, where, you know, a lot of the games was us trying to break down the opponent. And that's a challenge that the players are enjoying and I'm enjoying.
What a season they're having down at Portman Road. And Kieran McKenna is absolutely focused on getting his Ipswich Town side back into the top flight. And the way they're going so far, you certainly wouldn't bet against them. In September, we welcome one of our consistently favourite guests onto the podcast in the shape of Ryan Lowe, live from his holiday villa somewhere in the sunshine, where he admitted to us that he uses my weekly Pruts Predicts match predictions as his motivation for success with Preston North End. So given where you are now, before we let you go, top of the championship, you've preached that early season, plenty of games to go, plenty of water to go under the bridge. Can you tell us outwardly what Preston's base level of success is this season, given, as you say, the disappointment of getting incrementally closer to the top six over the last couple of seasons?
Well, Pruts, I'm not going to avoid the question. But I am. <'Cause>...
see you later then. So, I mean, but
you look, you know, I look at all your predictions every week on the Sky app, right?
Don't put any money on
listen,
them.
No, okay. Well, I can't do that, can I? But what I do,
is, yeah, very good point.
I say, is that right, Pruts? Yeah, I'll show you. So I have a little laugh to myself when I look at them. And you only have to look at the teams in the division. So I've got you there, haven't I?
You have,
so,
that's all right there.
Remember Paul Cook pulled you up on that one as well once before, didn't he? Where was we? Anyway, you said you had us to get beat. Remember, where was we?
I tell you, he's done that, Paul Cook. Nathan Jones, I forgot to mention it to Jones last week. He kind of properly given me a bit of it.
Listen, I don't mind. It's your job, mate, isn't it?
It's what the experts have to do. And when the experts turn up, Lowy, I'll let them do it. But for now, exactly. It's just me, mate.
And that's fine, mate. But to answer the question to the best I can, we want to try and stay in the top half of the division as long as we can, mate. We've done that last season and we fell short by 6 points. Are the big teams and the big hitters going to start coming good? You'd probably like to think so. Was there a lot of teams last season who didn't get nowhere near the playoffs, who were bigger and should be better and finances? Yeah, of course. But again, mate, we're just going to relish the opportunity of going to places like Southampton, Leicester and Leeds and having a real good go with them. And let alone the teams that, like, sort of, you know, where the teams are at the moment, like to the Huddersfields and the Rotherhams, they're still going to be tough games to go to, as you well know. So we don't take anything for granted, me, the staff and the players. Whatever team we come up against, and we'll have a right good go. And you know what, Pruts? If we can get as many points as we possibly can and come down to the last 10 games and you can have a little look and think, you know what, there's an opportunity here. That's all we'll do. Because I've had my fingers burned before by saying, oh, we're going to do this, going to do that. And then you get shot down. Our fans have been fantastic this season with the players, myself and the staff. No one has a real togetherness there and we'll keep producing to try and get as many points as we possibly can. Who knows? Look, listen, at one point I'd love to get to the promised land with Preston North End. Is that difficult? Of course it is. But you only have to look at Luton, who should be everyone's go-to to say, well, they can do it. Why can't anyone else?
The great thing is, I mean, you both know how small my backbone is. So the next round of predictions will be a Preston win. I mean, let's just clarify that.
Then you'll have Shuey on your case, won't you? Say
exactly. Yeah. In fact, it's definitely a draw. I'm going for a draw. And the great thing is, Stowley, it's Preston is part of a footballing hotbed up in the northwest that we've all. If you love football, regardless of where you are geographically, Preston North End, the big old name in the grand scheme of English football, isn't it? That we love covering, and you being from that neck of the woods and in that neck of the woods, you'll know absolutely all about that.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's funny how the history of a club like Preston North End can weigh heavy on some when they pull the shirt on. But actually, if you kind of get your own new identity under a new young manager, then, you know, it can give you the freshness, I suppose, and the confidence to say, well, we can add to that history. And that's how it looks from the outside looking in at the moment at Deepdale. So, yeah, all the best, Ryan, with the rest of it all.
No, I appreciate it, David.
Youngish manager, I'd say. Just to
clarify. I'm 45 next week, Pruts. Am I older?
When next week?
The 18th of September.
Oh, I'm the 12th, and I'm not 45, but that's a different thing altogether.
I'm the youngest of the three of us.
You are
the oldest of the three of us. So there we go. And I'm not a manager, so I mean, you know.
Never mind, David. Pruts,
go on.
Talk me about the beard.
Well, I'd just like to say categorically on air that it's not dyed. However, the filter on looks very dark.
Well, that was that. All our lads. So Big Polly was asking, did you have the hockey puck on it?
Well, so, if you go to this is not me,
bumping up my own socials, Pruts Official on Instagram. There's a wonderful picture I got sent that makes me look, that is comparing me to Rylan, which, I mean, having seen this, and I was doing a little bit for Sky Sports on deadline day on this very same setup. And the fella said to me, as we were doing all this, he said, have you put a filter on your computer? And I said, no, why? And he went, all right, don't matter. We'll be. I said, will it be all right? He said, yeah, we'll crack on. Went on, hence looking like a computer-generated version of myself with eyebrows and very sharp eyebrows, like a chiselled nose, a dark beard. And I've never had so many text messages off the back of it saying, what on earth have you done? So I've had to clarify, there's no dye, there's no facial reconstruction as yet. I'm not old enough, but that will come in time. But if you got up close and personal, mate, you'd see the white in it.
Well, look, what I will say, mate, is I think you've smartened your gear up so you look $1 million. And I think the beard suits you, so you look great.
What a wonderful way to end. All about me. We spoke to Ryan Lowe. We spoke to David Stout. We've heard from Liam Rossini. Let's end everyone staring at me. I don't feel self-conscious at all. Honestly, I promise you, I didn't pay him anything to say nice things about my beard. And incidentally, myself and Rylan are yet to be seen in the same room at the same time. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now, not only have we enjoyed the company of some brilliant guests so far this season, but we've also challenged one or two of them as well. And there's surely no greater challenge in the world of sport than the infamous 72 in 72, which sees plucky contestants attempt to name as many of the EFL 72 league clubs in just 72 seconds. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Well, you'd be surprised. Roll the VT.
So if you just look down the camera and just say, hi, I'm Matt Smith and this is the 72 in 72.
Hi, I'm Matt Smith and this is the 72 in 72.
Who went down for the Premiership? Southampton.
Oh, I can't help you.
Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Plymouth, Exeter, Torquay. Torquay aren't in the league. Nottingham, Notts Forest, no, they're not in there.
Luton. No, not Luton. Can we make again? you can cut that there.
Just trying to think of everyone we played.
How long have we got?
14 seconds.
14 seconds left.
I've just gone in.
When you had goals, time. You had goals, didn't it?
Time.
That's hard. That was hard, though.
Oh, my God, your mind goes blank.
So what I've gone. That is pathetic. That's pathetic, isn't it? That's really poor.
I totally went blank there.
Settlement.
I
take that.
That's hard, you know, to think in that way.
Yeah, was it? I thought it was Stevenage.
You just got that, mate. Stevenage was in the top of thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate. Cheers. Appreciate that.
That was a good score, by the way.
Can I just have another go
at it? Wayne Rooney there, amongst others, proving that it's not as easy as you'd think. And one young man who came through the ranks at Everton at the same time as Rooney is former Argyle, now new Stoke City boss, Stephen Schumacher, who remembers clearly the precocious talents of teenage Wayne and just how good he was.
Just going back to your days at Everton, Stephen, you were in the same youth team as Wayne Rooney, weren't you? And there's going to be a couple of questions, really. A, did you feel that...
what happened to him? Is that one of them?
A, where is he? Has he been in touch? But no, I was going to say, did you feel that your team were getting judged in terms of where maybe the standard is Wayne in terms of getting into the first team at Everton? But also, when you were released by Everton, I think you told me that your dad was upset, but you said, listen, I'm coming back here one day to manage this football club.
Yeah, I did say that, yeah. And going on with Wayne was obviously unbelievable. I think he's 18 months younger than me, Wayne, but played in my age group and played above me for the under-19s and probably got into the reserve team beforehand because, you know, he was that extra bit special than everybody else. He was physically more developed than everybody at our age, 16, 17. He was probably mentally ready for it. He didn't care that he was the youngest player in the dressing room. He felt he knew he was the best player, so he played with that confidence. So us other young lads who we felt were all good players were probably alongside him and saying they're not quite as good as Wayne.
Yeah. Which is tough.
Yeah, and I'm not sure Moisey would have turned around and said in Wayne's first 18 months that he's going to be was England's leading goal scorer and one of the best players this country's ever produced. I don't think anyone would have said that apart from Wayne himself, because that's what he was. So
yeah
he was the benchmark. And then, yeah, going, getting released from Everton, obviously, was a big blow. It was devastating as a young lad at 20. I was playing for England that season and got released, which in this day and age, that wouldn't happen. But I had to go out into the big bad world, went to Bradford City and loved it. But never a sort of let it affect me, but always had one eye on it. Okay, if I'm going to be a coach, if I'm going to be a manager, then that's my goal. I want to be the Everton manager. Me missus goes mad. Why do you want to manage Everton? There's so many better clubs than Everton. But,
what?
But not for me.
Where's this come from?
But not for me. Wow. No, that's the goal.
And a decent goal it is too, despite what his wife thinks. From one impressive young manager to another now, and Portsmouth John Moo Senior, who we spoke to back in October, John understands and appreciates the fiery passion that the Fratton Park fan base can muster up on match days. That makes it an intimidating place to visit, as I can certainly testify. Just give us a sense of, because I've only ever been to Portsmouth and Fratton Park as an away player, and being a former Southampton player, my word, you do know that you're in a battle, and the welcome that you get is unique. But it's a very proud city. It's a city that has seen a lot of success from its football club. It's the kind of fervent adulation that you want, I presume, if you are a manager, a head coach, if you are a player, you want that huge kind of passion from the fan base. What do you feel and see on a daily basis and around match days?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'd committed to when I joined the club was to move down here. So I've moved down here with the family, and I think you just get a better sense of what the club means to the people in the city. And it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, there's plenty of people down here who live for Saturday afternoons, and you know, that's the right, you know, that's the way it should be. I was like that as a fan, as a kid as well. So you know, the football club means a huge lot to the city. There's the Navy, the University and the football club. And, you know, Portsmouth as a football club are definitely number one in the ranking there, I think. And, you know, it's also, like you said, you alluded to there, the club in recent history have gone through some pretty tough times. And, you know, the fans who have been used to Premier League football and European football have now had to go through the mill a bit with what they've, you know, what they've sort of witnessed with the club going into administration, and then I'm coming back through the leagues, and you know, with that, there's a huge amount of expectation, a huge amount of pressure. But when it goes the right way, I think you get all the rewards, and we've seen that over the past few weeks, especially when the fan base get going, when they can see the I suppose the progress on the pitch, then you get just a massive backing. And I was like you, Prats, I'd only ever come to Fratton Park as an away player. And I knew it was just a horrible, horrible place to come.
I didn't want to say that.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
But you're right.
I said, look, it's awful to come there as an away player.
Intimidating, so isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, let's keep that up. Let's keep that up. Even coming up through the tunnel, it's a proper old stadium. And, you know, when the Fratton end gets going, it's an incredible, you know, thing to be part of. And, you know, when you're on the receiving end of it, it's not particularly nice. But when you've got that backing, home and away, to be fair, because the away fans, you know, they're brilliant as well. Again, it makes a massive, massive difference.
It certainly does make a massive difference. And together as a city and a club with one sole aim this season, they're giving everything, and it's wonderful to see. John Moo Senior has rightly got his admirers. And one of those is Nigel Clough, who's been there, seen it, and done it several times over. 25 years in, Nigel, if my maths are correct with regards to being a boss. Obviously started off as a player coach. I joked before you came, before we started recording, that the lot of a manager, I mean, it used to be 24/7, now it's about 27/10, isn't it? Because we can get you on Zoom, we can find you wherever you are, we can, well, ask nicely, you can always say no, but knowing the fella that you are, I knew we'd be all right. It's a substantial amount of time, more than a substantial amount of time. There's nearly 1,500 games there by my reckoning. Sat here talking to me and Dan, obviously that's one of the perks. Yep, he says to me,
of the 25 years.
Yeah. It's like the worst this is your life ever. You've got me and Dan. You can see on the look on your face and listening to you after the game on Saturday. Does it ever change? Does that sense of boxing off the weekend with 3 points, does that feel better now? Is there a different perspective to it as a manager that's been in it a long time, off the back of a stellar playing career, I hasten to add? What does winning feel like now to you?
Just as good. Just as good.
And not losing is the first one, which is hopefully why we've gone the 17 games. The losing is what drains your confidence and demoralises you. Oh. Coach, staff, managers, teams, everything. So even when there's some draws in there, it keeps the momentum going. And I don't think if we'd have lost one of the games the week previously, we had the three draws, two home draws, two nil-nils against Wrexham and Wimbledon, two good games. But if we'd have lost one of those 1-0, which could have done easily, then I don't think we get the result at Notts that we got. But the maintaining the confidence and the momentum from the draws and not losing means you're not far off a performance like we saw on Saturday. But it's still the ultimate, that's it, the week. Everything that is to do with the game, whether it's Tuesday, Saturday, whatever. Total focus on that. And when you get the point, all three, job done. And the feeling, it's a good feeling for a few days. Because then you've got another one round the corner. We've got Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday coming up. We're playing the Carabao Cup. We're playing the FA Cup coming up. We've got the AFL Trophy. We've got the league. I think we've got eight games in the next 24 days, starting Saturday.
That sense of, it goes hand in hand. We're talking about an unbeaten team. Therefore, you're in absolutely everything still out, which is the wonderful part about it. And just obviously, then there's Wrexham coming up in the FA Cup, familiarity possibly breeding contempt. Just touching on that time as a manager, do you have former player? Because we spoke to John Mussino last week. He was very much on the first step of his managerial journey, wherever that may take him. Do you get former players of yours? Do you get peers, colleagues? Is there a fraternal kind of conversation between former players that come to you and ask for your advice? Is there anyone that seeks it out? Do you go out of your way to make sure that former players that are in jobs are okay and touching base?
Yeah, of course. I never understand why managers get antagonistic towards each other when you're all in the same sort of job and you have the same understanding of how difficult it is. We compete against each other and want to win. But outside of that, then there should be that sort of fraternal relationship. And the other thing is where fellow managers go and try and get somebody out of a job when they're in a job. I think that's a very unsavoury part of it as well, whether it's agents or somebody ringing up, my man can come and do this or whatever. I don't like that side of the game at all. But yeah, certainly young managers, we've got a lad who's played for us at Burton called John McGrath, who's at Micklover, team, non-league team. And he's been there a few years now, but they've had a fantastic start, top of the league. I think they've won all the games. I had a chat with him last week and the week before. John Mussino bumped into a couple of times as well, just starting out. He's a brilliant lad and will go on, I think, to make a very good coach and manager. But even talking to Luke Williams after the game on Saturday, it was fascinating, some of his experiences, he was talking about the young offenders that he'd been coaching and everything, and that's on a whole different level there of what he did there, and what a brilliant life experience.
You're always learning, however long you have or haven't been in the game, as Nigel Clough explained to myself and Sky Sports commentator Daniel "The Lip" Mike Mann there. November saw the EFL's annual week of action take place, which sees players, managers and clubs as a whole demonstrate some of the fantastic work they do throughout the year in their own communities. One such project was Barnsley's Walking Football Initiative, and former Leicester City, Liverpool and England striker Emil Heskey was at Oakwell for the day to tell us all about it. Emil, welcome to the official EFL podcast. Tell us about what's been happening at Barnsley today, please.
Yeah, it's been a great day so far. joined in the walking football. It's actually more difficult than I ever thought it would be, because all I want to do is run. But it's been great to be asked to come along and support. I just about got crept under. It was over 50s, but at my ripe old age, I joined in, and it was really, really good fun. And it was it's great what the EFL and Sky Bet Building Foundation Fund are doing and committing to.
Well, I mean, they're committing to £6 million over 6 years. I mean, it's going to make a huge difference to the local communities at the centre of clubs just like Barnsley. And of course, there's 71 clubs across England and Wales. And most importantly, it makes a huge difference to the individuals who are benefiting from these particular schemes, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Again, making them active, giving them the opportunity to to support and to be around people is great, because again, it's not just football, but it's sport in general. But football has its part to play in that. We all love football, and when I was playing out there, they were all love getting involved and playing and scoring goals and celebrating. We're not allowed to tackle, so that was a tough one for me as well. But it was great to see them all coming out in their droves to support and to get involved.
Okay, Emil, before we let you go, I'm intrigued by something you said earlier on with regards to you taking part in this and you being reticent with regards to obviously not being allowed to run around. Has there been a lot of people in South Yorkshire attempting to take chunks out of Emil Heskey, former England international, this morning?
You're actually not allowed to tackle. I was trying to take chunks out of them.
What?
I fouled someone. You say you're not allowed to tackle from behind. And we're used to that, aren't we? So there was a couple of slide tackles trying to get the ball back.
But and just to finally knit it all together, that feeling that you get from physical activity, from that collective sharing of experience, like they are doing with walking football, you must know from your wonderful career that's behind you, and obviously a bright future ahead. How important that is, that sense of community, that sense of coming together, and how important these initiatives are.
It's absolutely huge. Again, just to rely on people as well, because sometimes you feel that you're on your own, but to come to these sort of events and you've got people around you making you feel good, and you're feeling good because you're working out, you're running around, you're getting a little bit of a sweat on, and there's that feel-good factor about it is nothing but a positivity that's surrounding them.
Well, listen, it's a wonderful story, a truly wonderful story, and one of the many that they're happening all over England and Wales as part of the EFL's Week of Action, made even more exciting by their partnership with Sky Bet to launch the Building Foundations Fund. Emil, thanks so much for joining us today on the official EFL podcast, mate. And from one great striker to another now, as we rewind back to early November, when our special guest was Notts County goal machine, Macauley Langstaff. I, as a player, ran around a lot, didn't know where the goal was. Stowley's a little bit similar to me. You, my friend, you can score goals in your sleep. How are you doing?
Good, mate, you?
We're good. I think you're the first guest, football guest, that's asked us how we were. So that inherently sets it in a different space, which I think does reflect possibly where you sit now at 26 for Notts County. Your journey here hasn't been straightforward, has it, by any stretch?
No, absolutely not. But I wouldn't change it for the world. I think when you've came from where I've came from, you appreciate every single day. And look, I'm playing for a club like Notts County, the size of the club, the history, everything's just unbelievable. So when I'm coming in every single day, I just appreciate the fact that I'm, one, getting paid to play football, that's every kid's dream, but two, to do it for a club like Notts County is special.
And the thing is as well, Macauley, is you talk about going through the levels, having read and seen and watched your journey. You've taken to each level very, very easily. Just talk us through what that is, what your approach is on a match day to score. Is scoring goals anywhere just second nature to you?
I think it has been since I was young. I started as a number nine, and I always had this sort of goal-scoring instinct, always score goals through the levels. When I got to about 17, 18, 19, it was a change and adapted and became a winger. But I was a winger that scored goals. I was a winger that had that goal-scoring instinct still, that carried through it into being a wide player. Obviously, everyone knows the story in the last 2 years, signing for Notts County and Luke Williams changing my position from a wide player to a number nine striker again.
Did he come to you and say, Macca, this is, you played there, I'm going to play you here, and this is how it's going to be, or is that a debate? Did he ask you what you thought about that?
No, so I actually tell a story. So basically, I signed for Notts County. There was no manager at the time. Luke hadn't been appointed, so there was no manager. And when I signed, I thought I might be a striker in a front two, because I didn't really play with wingers, so I thought I might be a striker in a front two. And then obviously, the gaffer got appointed, and his first meeting was, we watched his whole old Swansea team and the way they played. And obviously, I was a wide player, I was a winger, Gateshead. So I was watching the team and the formation, I was thinking, well, I don't play with wide players, so that isn't a great start. I was like, am I going to play in this system? And then the striker, he says, doesn't run the channels. So I'm like, well, that's my biggest strength. Last year, the year before, I was like, that's my biggest strength. So they don't play with wingers and they don't run the channels. So I'm like, I'm not fitting in here. And it was one of the first sessions we'd done like 11v11. He was trying to get his point across to the lads and how he wanted to play and things. And I made a run into the channel and got the ball. I thought, oh, I've done well there. I've crossed it and someone got a touch in the box. I was playing as a striker at the time and training, and I thought, I've done really well there. I ran into the channel, got in behind the defence and crossed it. And he stopped the full session and he was like, no, my strikers don't do this in this team. So I was just thinking, right, don't play with wide players. They don't play with strikers that run channels. I'm not going to play here. Obviously, over the next few weeks, I was adapting and listening to every word he said and watching videos and scoring goals in training, scoring goals in pre-season games. I realised quite quickly that I could go to a different level in terms of my numbers. So, yeah, at the start, I speak to him now and say I was a bit sceptical at first because I didn't think I was going to play. But obviously, after a few weeks, I realised that it was going to work.
Is that a lesson to young players, though, Macaulay, to listen to people around them, perhaps, and keep an open mind? Because you could have quite easily said, right, I'm not doing that. This is not my game. I'm not going to fit in here. Get on the phone to someone and say that I don't want to be here anymore. But instead, you've obviously taken it all on board and said, right, come on, let's do this. And your numbers speak for themselves.
Absolutely. I'd say that's probably one of my biggest strengths. I'm not stubborn or I haven't got an ego to think that I've cracked anything. Even now, after scoring 42 last year and having 12 goals already this season, if the gaffer tells me to do something and says I'm not doing it right, I need to do this, I'm going to say, yeah, that's right, I'm going to try that, because he hasn't been wrong yet. Why should I not listen to the gaffer just because I've scored goals? And that was the case when I came in. And that's, obviously, I scored 32 for Gator the season before. So it could
have
been...
These numbers are ridiculous. I've got these written down, but to hear you say them, I'm kind of going... That is great. They're crazy numbers.
That's only been the past few years. If before that, they weren't great.
I wasn't going to mention that, but I was just going to mention the 84 in your last 114 league games for the two clubs together, and that's very impressive. God.
We'll just keep that. Yeah, we'll just keep that for a few years. but no. So when I came into Notts and I'd scored 32, playing a certain way, I think other players maybe might look at that and go, "Well, I'm not going to listen to the manager. I've just scored 32 doing it this way. Why should I change?" But I wasn't stubborn enough to do that. I would never be. And yeah, from the first meeting I had with him, I listened to every word he said, and I'm glad I did now, because obviously I've took my numbers to a different level.
So that's your lot, I'm afraid. Macaulay Langstaff and his ridiculous goal scoring stats brings the curtain down on this week's special edition of the podcast, and indeed on the year 2023 as a whole. Huge thanks to all of the guests who have joined us so far this season. And we're already looking forward to spending some quality time with the biggest names in the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, when we return next week to kick off 2024. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the follow button and share on all of your socials. If you want to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton, saying thank you once again and wishing you all a very happy new year. And we'll see you next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.